Shall we talk about Ben, Theo, and the Crisis One call?
The incident.
The incident.
Well, one of two incidents.
One of two incidents. Now,
Because there's other incident in the clinic. So there's
oh
like,
yeah.
I consider that an incident too,
Yeah.
kind of. So.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I was just racking my brains again, no sleep, as to what it was. Ben and Theo turn up at a house, the resident of which, Connie, is not aware that a Crisis One call has been placed. Sure is a good start. Ben notices immediately that not only is she a dialysis patient, but there is also a very distinct set of bruises on the same arm in which she gets her dialysis treatment. And said bruises can only have been made by fingers constricting it. Both he and Theo look into the house past Connie and can see upturned furniture. So Ben makes the excuse that her dialysis site looks like it might be becoming infected, and that he'd like to have a look at it so as to gain entry into the house. Then he asks Connie how she got the bruises, and she says they were caused by the dialysis. And at this point, he chooses not to contradict her, just to go along with it. And then we hear a delightful young man scream down the stairs for Connie to make him some eggs. And when she says to make him himself, he comes down and then yells at her that she hasn't bought any eggs before demanding, oh, I think the post lady's about to.
Upper letter in a bag for me, Mr.
Oh, we
Postman.
got away with it.
Look and see.
What song's that? Is that the
It's, I don't know the
old
name
one
of
from like
it.
the 50s or the 60s or something?
Yeah,
Whoa,
yes, it
whoa,
is.
whoa, Mr. Postman. That one.
Yep.
Write me a letter.
Yes.
The sooner the better.
Yeah.
I know
Yes.
that one.
Yep, you got it.
I know that one. We got away with it. My dogs are upstairs and Defo didn't hear it. So.
Oh, good.
And Blue only shouts if Tucker does. So,
Oh,
whew,
good.
got away with it, got away with it.
Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate. So, yes, where were we? Eggs, eggs. Yes, the son comes down and then yells at the mother that she hasn't bought any eggs before demanding to know who Ben is and what he's doing in his house. Theo has stayed outside and grabs the attention of a neighbour who's been walking his dog to ask if he knows what's going on in the house. And the neighbour confides that he was the one that placed the Crisis One call because the son is very volatile. And just the week prior had pointed a gun at his dog. And the neighbour believes that he would have shot either him or his dog if he hadn't put the dog inside when he did. So then Theo goes inside and motions to Ben that there's a gun in the house whilst mother and son argue over money. And around him being a deadbeat, before the son turns his attention to Ben and Theo. And Ben tries to talk him down, but the son accuses Ben of talking to him like he's an idiot and saying that nobody gives him the respect he deserves as the man of the house. And then to prove him correct, his mother tells him that if he wants people to stop treating him like an idiot, he should stop acting like one, which only riles him more. And an object is thrown at the wall, which smashes. And then the son storms out of the house, dragging a pile of kitchenware off the side as he leaves. So Theo sort of surreptitiously follows him out and clocks him cleaning his gun collection in the shed, screaming at next door's dog to shut up. And so then Theo casually makes himself known to the son, saying that he wanted to see if he was okay. And the son tells Theo that he's seen now and to get lost. So Theo complies and quietly calls for backup. Inside the house, Ben is trying to reason with Connie that her son's violent, but she says it's fine and that she goads him. And she says she does so thinking that it will make him more of a man, which is of concern. But Ben's worried about him being so volatile and having access to guns and tries to get Connie to use the state's red flag law to temporarily remove the son's guns from him until he's in a better headspace. But Connie won't do it, saying that Ben's trying to take away her son's rights and freedom. But Ben rightly says that if he goes off on the wrong person, he will be jailed and then he will permanently lose his freedom. And with that, we hear a gunshot outside. So Theo calls in a shots fired, and they go out to find the son having an altercation with the neighbor, who's now in tears, fearing that his dog will be shot. But the son puts the gun down when he hears sirens coming, but he does so laughing in the neighbor's face, calling him a bitch. The police do nothing and decide to call it self-defense because the dog looks scary. and they just take the
Yeah,
sons.
that dog looked really
Oh,
gnarly.
didn't he just? Yeah.
Yeah, he really did.
So they take the son's word that the dog was going to attack him, despite Ben pointing out that it's on a lead or a leash, I think you call it over there. And Ben also points out the complete lack of wisdom of not doing anything about guns until somebody gets badly hurt or killed, and then again tries to plead with Connie, but the son squares up to him, telling him to get off his property, which Connie backs up with her facial expression. And so Ben has no choice but to walk away. However, it looks as if Ben managed to get through because Connie turns up at the station later, asking Ben to get the guns out of the house for a little while because she doesn't want her son to go to prison. So I feel like you should take the lead on this one because I live in a country that has like zero gun culture. Your country has a constitutional right to bear arms, whereas over here we have very strict laws banning gun ownership outside of like very narrow exceptions. So a person feeling so passionately about owning something which is designed to kill another human being, frankly, is an entirely alien concept to me.
First, I want to say, did you get the feeling that Connie was talking to, I think his name was Sam, was the son's name
Yeah.
Sam, in a more aggressive way because there were other people there?
Yes.
Like the when she said to him, like, make him yourself. Do you think she would have said that if they wouldn't have been there?
Well, I think that they probably have a little bit of that kind of a relationship anyway, because she does say, like, you know, that's how my was it her dad used to talk to her brother? She says something about and she says,
But is that
I
why
think
he
it'll
gets
make a
aggressive?
yeah, I think it'll make a man out of him. When obviously all it's done is, you know, made him more aggressive. But I do
Yeah,
think
made him a
that,
deadbeat.
and so I think that that sort of, I mean, if I've just never heard that sort of tone of voice even, do you know what I mean? In my upbringing. And so I think that probably that's quite normal for them. And I think that for her, that sort of behavior is normalized. And so I think it's quite easy for it to spill over into violence. But I do think that she probably is more compliant when people aren't there. I do think that. And I think maybe that shines through as well in the sense that she wasn't prepared to invoke the red flag laws or start the process of invoking the red flag laws in front of Ben and backed the son up and then obviously awaited her chance and went and did it behind his back. So I think that you're probably right. Yeah, I think that she was being a bit more feisty to sort of make a show for everyone that, oh, this is fine, this is normal, this is just what we do, this is just how we talk to each other. I give as good as I get, don't worry about it. Yeah.
I know that Jason George actually went to the writers and asked them to do an episode on gun control because of the issues here in the States
Yeah.
around guns, which I thought was pretty cool. And
Yeah.
this is the episode that they came up with. It is a very passionate thing here. There's people on both sides that are very passionate about how they view it and what their beliefs are. Because you can have a CPL, a concealed pistol license. If you have that, you can carry your gun hidden. And then there's open
Open
carry
carry,
laws
yeah.
where you have to carry it open so everybody can see it, which makes some people uncomfortable. So, it's definitely an issue here. I do think we need stricter gun control laws, and there are certain guns that I believe you shouldn't be able to buy here. Like nobody needs an AR-15.
No, or an AK-47 or anything like that,
Yeah,
no.
like why do you need that? Nobody needs that. And so, it's a very passionate thing here, and I'm glad that Shondaland used once again their platform to shine light on something. I did not know about the red flag law. That was something I learned.
Well, then how bloody great is it that they put that in? I know about red flag laws just because I listen to a lot of, I'm quite invested in the US politics. And I've heard mention of red flag laws on Rachel Maddow's program and Alex Wagner's program. But and I know that they're only in some states, like it's not a universal thing. But how great that they've kind of highlighted that for you, because I'm sure California's got one, because California's a democratic state.
Very liberal, yeah.
So it looks like they've done a great job because they've alerted one person that we know of to that law.
So let us know if you knew about it, and if it's in, if you're in the States, do they have, what kind of, do they have it in your state? Let us know,
Yeah, do.
because I'm interested to know, you know, just kind of what it, because we are such a big country and each state is different. I'm interested to know what's out there when it comes to that red flag petition.
But
But no, it was, I think it was a good incident, and I, like I said, I learned a lot, so.
yeah, I thought that actually that block was super well done. And I found it really tense. I didn't think for a second that either Ben or Theo were going to get shot. I wasn't worried for Ben or Theo
No.
one bit, but
No.
I was actually really worried for that dog.
Yeah,
That's where
or the
the
neighbor.
yeah, that's where the tension was for me. I thought he really is going to shoot that dog. So yeah, I thought that they played it really, really well. And
Melissa's
also,
not worried about the neighbor, she's worried
oh yeah,
about
no, sorry, I am always going to be more worried about
the
a dog.
dog. You caught that.
Oh God, there's something wrong with me, isn't there? I've never been wronged by a dog, is the thing.
I understand
Yeah.
completely.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was really well done. And I don't know if this was intentional on the writer's part, and if anyone else picked up on it. But when Connie went to the station and asked for Ben to help her take his guns away, she didn't say, "I don't want somebody to get hurt." She said, "I don't want my son to go to jail."
I caught that too.
That was a little bit of a WTF moment for me. And it's like, good on you, Connie. Like, proud of you. Good job. However, your motivation concerns me somewhat.
Yeah, like you should be more concerned about some, what is going to happen to
Yeah.
somebody that would
About
cause him
that
to go
dog, I mean
to
your neighbor potentially being shot.
jail.
Yeah. Also, this is completely aside, and this is just me asking this question. Isn't the whole constitutional thing about owning a gun, doesn't that predate the US Army? And is wasn't it about like making sure that there was a well-armed militia because you didn't have an army, like in case of invasion? So now that you've got a well-armed militia and it's very well organized and extremely well-funded, there's not really any need for a constitutional right to own a gun, is there? Because you've got armed people everywhere who are very happy to defend you, because you only have to look at the amount of police officers that shoot people on sight to know that you've got people who are very happy to defend you who are armed. Just saying.
Just saying.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
That's so
I haven't
funny.
read your constitution. I don't know. Just. I'll shut up now.
Nope, it's in there.
Any more to say about that other than brilliant and well done you to everyone involved?
Good job.
Good job, good job. Oh, look, it's another incident. Patient zero slash the clinic. There it is.
Hey, look.
Hey.
Two out of
Two
two.
out of two. Should we ready to go on to that one? Should we do that one?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get
Okay.
into some Stefania
Stefania Spampinato. I did it that way for Gloria.
Spampinato.
Gloria.
Yes.
At lineup, we find out that it's clinic day and Kate,
Yay.
boo, is standing in because Travis is off cheating on Eli and Vic is off being casually harassed at Uncle Vinny's wake. And Andy asks Kate to help with restocking the clinic, but she says that she would rather be out in the field. And Andy gives her a choice of restocking the clinic or desk duty. And then Sullivan very helpfully mansplains to Andy how to be captain, because obviously she's never done that before. And he tells
No.
her that in his experience, what you want to do is steal medication, get high, piss
Wow.
your pants, and then get sacked. No, he tells her that in his experience,
Wow.
sorry, in his experience, you shouldn't give people a choice. You should just tell them what they're going to do. And he calls it Military 101, to which she wittily replies, at ease, soldier. And then Kate decides to wind Theo up when he approaches her to say that he and Vic have now broken up by asking him if that means they can finally get together. And all the color drains from his face, at which point she laughs, telling him he's kidding, but that she's still up for a good time, which makes the color drain from his face a second time. But luckily, his Crisis One call comes in and saves him from further embarrassment. Dana, one half of the Trouble Twins, as Sullivan calls them, or the Weed Mums, as we call them, is on hand
Yep.
to help on reception. I mean, help should probably be in quotation marks there, shouldn't it? But we're only in for half of the chaos because she says that Peggy's at work.
Oh, that's sad.
Isn't it just? Oh, Peggy was also in the
It is.
Fosters, by the way, in an episode of the Fosters.
Oh, okay.
Just there's just another crossover there. I just like pointing out the crossovers.
As Peggy or a different
No,
character?
different character. She
Oh,
played a
okay.
school
So that would have been
counselor.
cool.
Yeah, it would have been cool.
Oh, okay.
But the Fosters finished before, well, either before Station 19 started, or it was, or they would have maybe crossed over because I think the Fosters ended in 2018, which is when Station 19 started. But yeah, we could have crossed over. Seattle's not massively far away from California. You've only got to cross one state, drive across one state.
Yeah, then you're there.
Anyway, Peggy's elsewhere, which is sad. But three kids come running in to get Karina, saying that someone's hurt outside. And then we see them later running amok in the barn whilst Karina and Maya attend to said hurt person to whom they were referencing, who was their nanny. And she's had to come in because she got kicked in the face by one of the delightful children, trying to help them off the monkey bars. However, she's feeling a little bit dizzy and a little bit lightheaded, and Maya notices something on her chest that looks like sunburn. Then the three horse children of the apocalypse are still running around like chaos demons when Sullivan stops them in their tracks and crouches down to their level and is surprisingly remarkably good with them,
Yes,
calming
that's
them
very
down in the
surprising.
sweetest manner imaginable, with Andy watching on. Meanwhile,
Yes.
the nanny is now burning up and bleeding from her gums, but Karina gets pulled away by Kate, mid-examination, who comes in to say that there is a lady there who will only be treated by Bishop's wife, which I'm sure she loves being a very highly trained physician, being referred to as Bishop's wife. We took an impromptu break, guys, which I will edit out because Julia came down to make her lunch and she made me a salami and cheese sandwich while she was here to match Tiffany's. And now it's looking at me. Oh, and it's on freshly baked sourdough bread. Anyway, where were we?
Where do we leave off? Yeah, where
Oh,
were
I
we?
know where we were. We were with the nanny with the bleeding gums and Karina being referred to as Bishop's wife.
Bishop's wife,
Yeah.
yes. Which Maya did not
Which
like.
Maya did not like, which is
No.
my most giftable moment. So anyway, yes, Karina is pulled away by Kate, and she's pulled away to go and see a patient who is a mum of a little girl who is in a wheelchair, and the mum is complaining of a stress-related migraine. Karina gives the little girl Nina, a stuffed bear, but then Uncle Sully comes in and takes her off to play with the other three kids. And Karina asks the mother if she can check her pupils, and in response, the mother says, "You really don't remember me, do you?" But before Karina can answer, Maya pulls her away because the nanny is now projectile vomiting and says that she's been feeling pretty rough for a couple of days since she got back from a backpacking trip around Southeast Asia. And it's at this point.
I wish they would have. I'm like, sorry to
No,
interrupt,
please.
but I so wish that Karina would not have gotten interrupted because I want to know what that woman was going to say to her. But we will never know now.
Like delayed gratification, like with my sandwich.
Yeah, it's.
We
Although the sandwich is it's a lot better gratification.
true, true, true. So Karina then realizes that they may have a patient zero situation, and she has everyone gown and mask up, and Andy has Sullivan lock the station down.
Am I the only one that loved how Stefania said Captain Herrera?
No, I loved
Do
it.
you
You're not
notice
the only
that?
one. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Herrera.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
roll that tongue,
Captain
girl.
Herrera. Yep.
The of course, it of course would not be a Weed Mums episode if one of them didn't cause a near disaster, which Dana does by trying to soothe the trapped patients, telling them that they're in the best possible hands, even if the lockdown's due to Ebola.
She literally just said Ebola.
Yeah, that was the
She's like,
first thing
nobody
that
said
popped in her
Ebola.
head. Like, is it? And
Yeah.
then Sullivan was like, "Nobody's saying Ebola." And one of them's like, "She literally said Ebola."
She literally
She
just said
literally said
Ebola.
Ebola. Karina and Maya have now isolated themselves and the nanny in one of the upstairs offices, whilst Andy and the chief are outside on the phone to the CDC trying to figure out what the nanny might have. And poor Karina's main concern is that they might have to quarantine for 20 days now, and that might mean them losing the baby, who may have to be fostered elsewhere. Bless her. In the barn, Karina's patient, Nina's mum, asks Sullivan for a private room for Nina because she's worried about her being exposed. And Sullivan says the risk is very low, but that he understands her stress, at which point she tells him that he doesn't know stress, going on to say that her life is getting up at 5 a.m. after a sleepless night, doctor's appointments, physical and occupational therapy, etc., because she's her daughter's carer 24/7, because Nina's got cerebral palsy. And so Sullivan offers her a room and a listening ear. Back in the upstairs office, Maya realizes that the sunburn is not a sunburn, but is in fact a gnarly rash which is now spreading. And the chief recognizes it as something she thinks she saw in a rag. So she asks the nanny if she's been bitten by any insects and asks Andy to ask the CDC about dengue fever. And so then they locate some insect bites and do a push test on the rash, and that confirms it to be dengue fever, which is not contagious. So panic over and everyone can leave. So with most people out, Sullivan grabs one of the chaotic children and sends him through to the chief with a note that reads, "Will you marry me?" with yes and no tick boxes. And the chief sends the note back, having drawn on her own tick box, which she has labeled maybe. Then Maya and Karina are tidying up at the end of the day when a process server, as you like to call them, comes in and serves Karina with papers from Nina's mother, who is suing Karina, presumably for malpractice. But in the middle of Karina's despair, both of their phones ping, which puts a smile on both of their
Ding.
faces. And Maya takes a still discombobulated Karina by the hand, running her out of the door to attend to whatever business was on their phones. And then in the beanery, Andy tells Sullivan that she was impressed with the way he handled things on the day, and so she's putting him in charge of the clinic. He resists, so she tells him that she's not asking, she's telling, clapping back with Military 101, giving him no option but to reply with, "Yes, Captain." Did I miss anything?
No, that was very thorough.
Thank you.
Yeah, you hit it all.
First of all, how criminally underused was Merle Dandridge in this episode?
Yeah, thank you. Because, I can't say that because I just get accused of things.
Of being madly in love with Merle Dandridge, which obviously you're not.
No, I'm not. But no, I agree. I felt the same way. I felt like, come on,
Yeah.
we could have done a little bit more with Merle Dandridge in this
She
episode.
had like three scenes. There was the one in Andy's office at the top of the show, which we'll talk about in the next block, and then like the two in this block. And that was it.
And they weren't even that
No,
much.
just like, I mean, she was technically the hero of the hour because she was the one that realized it was dengue fever. But literally, she was like the intermediary in the CDC call. She had that scene where she received a note and sent it back. which boy did she have a lot to do there. And then like two lines in Andy's office at the top of the show. That's just like
Come
leaving your
on.
star quarterback on the bench.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're quite
I
welcome.
appreciate that so much.
Quite welcome. It's true. I speak only the truth. But apart from that, what did you think of this block? What did you think of the patient zero situation?
I thought it was pretty neat. It was creative. I liked the way it panned out and the way that Chief Frost figured it out. But I thought it was cool. I thought it was
Was different, wasn't it?
well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was well done, and it was interesting, and yeah, like you said, it was different, which made it cool.
Yeah.
So I liked it. I thought it was really neat.
I think the only thing that was like mildly disappointing about it, which it obviously has to be, is that it's a bit anticlimactic at the end. It's like, oh, but it's okay. It's just an insect bite and it will go on its own. But as I say, it has to be anticlimactic at the end unless you want to turn it into an outbreak situation. So like they've got no
Where it
option
actually is a
for
patient
it to be
zero.
like, oh, but it's just this thing. But no, it was really good. Yeah, and really different because I don't remember them having one of those before.
No, it really kind of showed a different side of the clinic too.
Yeah. What on earth was going on in Andy Herrera's head when she saw Sullivan interacting with those children?
I don't know. She definitely, her facial expression said a lot. It really made you wonder what she was thinking.
It looked to me like she was seeing him as baby daddy material, I've got to
I agree with that. Like, yeah, he's really good with kids.
tell
Sometimes I think they have her look at him like longingly too. Like, sometimes I think she has regret about their relationship.
Yeah. But again, it was like the whole thing was so rushed. And also, he wasn't in a good place then, and he wasn't a good partner. And he was still so ambitious. And to be fair, that's what's getting in the way of him and the chief as well, is his blind ambition. So,
He hasn't learned his lesson.
yeah. And also, I didn't think Andy was like the 2.4 children and picket fence type. But maybe seeing him with those children made her ovaries twinge a little bit.
Maybe. And she's dealing with, she wrote the letter for Marina for the foster, so
Yes, she
she's
did.
looking at that as kids. So maybe she just had kids on her mind
Yeah.
all around.
Yeah. Also, did you catch Karina calling Sullivan Sully? I thought only Ross called him
I did.
Sully, but is that a thing now? Yeah,
No, I did. It triggered me too. I was
it's
like,
like,
was she just
hey?
Sally?
Yeah.
Totally agree.
I mean, it's a very minor detail, but we know what I'm like on minor details. Just I
No,
get a little bit caught
it
up in
was
them.
interesting detail.
And what about that proposal?
I mean, it was like fifth grade cute or fourth grade cute
Yeah.
back when we used to do notes like that. But I don't know. I wonder why the chief is so hesitant about marriage with him. I want to know what's going on in her mind.
Yeah.
Because and it wasn't that many scenes ago that she was in the car saying she wants to marry him and love him and tell the whole world about their love, and now whenever he brings up marriage, she's very reluctant. And so I'm interested to know why.
I think, well, first of all, I'm not entirely sure that it was a serious proposal. I think it was just him letting her know that he didn't
That he's
say it on a
thinking about
whim
it.
and that he is serious and that he is going to keep asking. Although he has just asked her when they're in crisis again because they've just had this like big adrenaline fueled day of thinking they've got some sort of deadly disease floating around the station. And I'm fairly sure she said to him, stop doing shit when we're in crisis, do it on a Tuesday when we both can feel like
Like I
crap.
told you.
Yeah. So I don't think his proposal was, I don't think it was an actual proposal. I think it was literally, again, like, I'm serious about this and I'm just letting you know that I'm serious about this. I think he probably would have been gutted if she'd said yes, because he didn't have a ring or anything ready, did he? Like, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I wonder if maybe, like, the where you're talking about the scene where she was saying, "I want to marry you, I want to shout it from the rooftops."
Yeah.
I think that that was probably around that time when he just kept letting her down, kept letting her down, kept letting her down. I think that was probably her wake up call that, like, I'm ready for this, but he isn't. And
Okay.
so now I think that he's saying, I'm ready for this. She's worried that it's just a knee-jerk reaction to her near death. And that
Okay.
really he is just doing it because he's panicked. And that maybe he still isn't ready. And so I don't think the hesitancy is necessarily like her feelings for him. It's maybe that it just feels rushed to her and she doesn't want to rush into it and ultimately get hurt. That's what I maybe think. That
Okay.
you know, yeah, that's what I think maybe. But
What do you guys think? I'm very interested in people's opinion on this,
yeah.
on her hesitancy and what's going through the chief's mind, when it comes to marrying Sully, because she's obviously in love with him. But what's going on? What's the
What's going
reluctancy here?
on?
Let us know. Write to us and let us know.
Yes, please do. The thing that worried me a little bit is this whole situation with the mother who's suing Karina. It's got me sucking my teeth a little bit. I'm not usually concerned when Station 19 brings storylines up, be it systemic racism, be it something to do with LGBTQIA plus issues. They just did this thing with gun control really, really well. I don't normally like have a little like niggle of worry. And maybe I'm worrying over nothing and I'm being like overly sensitive, but the way that the mother was talking, the way they wrote that gave me pause. I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, and when Karina had to walk away, her reaction, the look on her face and kind of like the aggressive sigh. I agree. It gave you definitely pause.
I'm sort of more worried about how they might. How it could possibly be perceived in terms of her attitude towards her daughter and her disability. Because she says that Nina loves to watch other children play, whereas Sully, if that's what we're calling him now, just goes and gets her and has her joining in with the three able-bodied children, like
To
no
play,
questions asked. But she's like, oh, she likes to watch other children play.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And then later, when she's talking to Sullivan during the lockdown, she seems to center herself a lot, saying that her days are filled with doctor's appointments and physical therapy and etc. And I was sat there thinking to myself, no, Nina's days are filled with those things. And you take her because you're her mother, and that's what mothers do for their children. And I just didn't like the way that she was the one that sidelined Nina, saying, oh, she likes to watch children play, and it was down to Sullivan to treat her as equal to the other children and just as capable of play. And that she talks about the stress of the things she has to do caring for her daughter 24/7. Whereas in my, I mean, admittedly limited experience, but in my experience of people who care for disabled loved ones, they do so with a sense of, I don't say it's like they do so with pleasure, but it's almost like a privilege that they can be there for that person rather than seeing them as a burden. And again, maybe I'm being oversensitive, but it just felt as if she was talking about her child as if she was a burden. Whereas
No, I
if
agree.
it had been written that she'd said, Nina has to go through so much, it would have sounded completely different to this is what I have to go through every day. And maybe it'll come out in the wash. Like maybe she's suffering from empathy fatigue, and that's what the story's going to be. But at the minute, it looks to me like she's suing Karina because she has to be a carer for her child in a different way than mothers of able-bodied children have to be carers for their children, rather than like I'm doing this for my kid. Like it feels like she's doing it for her because of the way that it was written. And actually, the more I'm talking about it, and the more I can kind of rationalize it, maybe that is the storyline. Maybe it is going to be about empathy fatigue and how that kind of eventually gets to parents of children with additional and special needs and stuff. Because something must be,
Caregiver burnout for
yeah,
sure.
because something must be going on for her to only now be thinking about suing Karina. Because I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have taken her like 5 years to look into what might have caused her child's cerebral palsy and decide it was Karina's fault. You know, surely she must know that Karina isn't actually responsible, or she would have sued her long before now. You don't wait 5 years.
Which I'm wondering what the statute of, there's got to be a statute of limitations.
Yeah, I don't, I, yeah, I don't know.
Somebody posted on Twitter that they looked it up, and in Washington, it's 3 years.
For medical
So,
negligence,
yes.
then that would
So
have been a
I
bit of an
wonder if
oversight,
the
wouldn't
writers, yeah, if the writers looked that up.
And especially with Zoran Clack being a physician, he didn't.
Yeah,
Whoops.
that's so funny. Oopsies.
Eepsy peepsies. But yeah, so maybe empathy fatigue is going to be the underlying reason for all of this. And then that would explain why she's centering herself and she's decided that she wants to lash out at Karina. So she's got someone to blame and somewhere to put her negative emotions and stuff instead of putting them on her child. But if it's not that, then I worry about them writing a story about disability as if a disabled person is a burden.
Which is very, they need to be very careful with that.
Yeah.
Because that's not the case.
No.
And like you said, as a parent, it should be your joy to take care of your child.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is going to be interesting which way the writers go and how they handle it and
Yeah.
how they go about it.
But it just made me kind of go, ooh, when she was saying those
And
things, it
cringe a
just
little bit.
felt very uncomfortable. But
Agreed.
on a lighter note, medical malpractice is not something that I have any experience with. However, I am currently a defense lawyer and I'm an exceptionally fast learner and I would be very passionate about this cause were Karina to want to retain me to assist in her defense. I'm just saying.
All right, Karina, we have a defense lawyer for you right here.
Yeah, I'm right here. I don't generally do my own advocacy, so you're going to have someone as a mouthpiece, but I'm happy to go through medical records and do sort of little compare and contrast. And I'm excellent at drafting applications, which I think you call motions in your side of the world. So I'm just saying, I'm right here.
Just saying.
Always here for Dr. Karina DeLuca.
Your gateway drug.
My gateway drug. Any more to say about that, or shall we talk about Jackie Boy?
Let's talk about good old little diddly about Jack and Diane. Two American kids growing up in the heartland.
So good.
Thank
So
you.
good. Just puts my rendition of Gloria to just to absolute shame.
I don't think anything can put that to shame. That was pretty wicked,
Thanks.
if I may say so
Thank
myself.
you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. I
You're
can't
welcome.
resist a little bit of the Flashdance
Mm-hmm.
soundtrack. So all Jack, no Diane. The show opens with Jack in Andy's office with she and the chief breaking it to him, or her and the chief, I should say.
Which they should have had Diane there for that
Yeah, they
moment.
should
Just
actually.
looking back,
Yeah.
yeah.
And they break it to him that Amelia Shepherd and now the workers' comp doctor both say that it would be too dangerous for Jack to ever be an active firefighter again. And he tries to bargain that his scans could change, but the chief gently tells him that he knows that it's a lifelong condition. And he comes to the realization then, right there and then, that he's not a firefighter anymore. Ben, Theo, Meyer, and Sullivan all try to give him a pep talk whilst he's packing up his locker, but he tells them he's fine. However, his face when Andy calls 19 for a lineup and he realizes that this no longer includes him says otherwise. At the clinic, Weed Mum Dana is trying to check a patient in when Jack intervenes because this particular patient doesn't check in the usual way because she's escaped her abuser. So her name shouldn't appear on any records. And Karina comes to check if everything's okay because he's noticeably upset. And he says that they can't just go changing his systems. And she promises him that she won't and that she will make sure that his vision stays alive. But then they're interrupted by the three kids who come in screaming about their nanny. And so Karina runs out to help, but she physically holds Jack back, who instinctively wants to go with her. And then we see him reluctantly turn around and walk the length of the barn with the camera pulling further and further and further away. Kate, bloody Kate, has been making head injury cracks in Jack's absence all day. And when Andy comes into the equipment room and notices that Jack's left his helmet behind, she makes yet another crack, saying that if anyone needs a helmet, Gibson does. However, seeing the helmet gives Andy an insight as to Jack's state of mind, and she makes a call. And then we realize that that call was to Marsha when we see Marsha and Jack having dinner in a restaurant together, with Marsha admonishing him for skipping the family dinner that 19 had planned for him that evening. But she's obviously told Andy where Jack can be found because in come Ben and Theo with a stretcher or a gurney, you call it, saying that they got a call about a bummed out firefighter and joke that if he doesn't get on said gurney and come with them, they will sedate and or restrain him. So he hops on saying that he wants to push the button and he wants sirens. And so then he joins the team for a family dinner in the beanery, entering with his helmet tucked under his arm. And they sit him at the head of the table, and Ben comes in with a giant firefighter helmet cake. And then Maya and Karina come in with the baby, who I guess we're tentatively calling Liam. So that answers the question of what business they were attending to when they went running out of the barn. And then Andy passes Jack a marker pen, and he lays on his back under the table and signs his name. And that's when we see the signatures of other firefighters who've left 19, including that of Captain Herrera. And Andy lies next to
Which
Jack.
did you notice the way they spelled Herrera?
No,
They spelled it
did
wrong.
they?
They spelled it HERRERRA.
Well, that is unfortunate.
Yeah, there's four. They put four R's in it, and that's not how you spell it.
No,
So
it
they spelled Herrera. Yeah, they spelled Herrera
is not.
wrong,
That's
which
a
was like, come on,
massive
guys.
oversight. Come on.
Yes. Yeah.
Set deck, we're looking at you. First,
Side
it's the
eye, side eye.
flipping wand of sage on Maya's bedside table. Now you can't spell Herrera.
Yep, after 7 seasons,
Dude,
can't
come
spell
on.
Herrera.
But
SMH.
it was yeah, it was really moving seeing those other firefighters' signatures, and especially
It
seeing
was.
Captain Herrera's. And then Andy lies next to Jack, and one by one, the rest of 19 join them, and we close out with Jack shaking his head in floods of tears.
Which they filmed that scene right after they found out the show was being canceled.
Oh.
That's the scene they had to go on set and film after they found out.
Pretty easy to get some emotion into it then.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't say enough good things about Grey Damon in this episode.
Yeah, no, I
The man
agree.
was an
Beautifully.
absolute tour de force.
Yes, beautifully done. Good job, Grey Damon.
Yeah. Acting at its finest.
Yes. And a different side, right? A different
Yeah.
side of Jack that we haven't
Yeah.
really seen.
Yeah.
Just really stretched Grey Damon's acting abilities. And I'm glad we got to see it.
Yeah. What do you think's in Jack's future? What do you see for him?
I was thinking, like, could he volunteer at the clinic? Could he do that, or is that outside of his ability? Because they said fire, he couldn't be a firefighter, but
Yeah.
could he be, he doesn't really have to. I mean, even if he just did check-in or check-out or stuff like that, could he do that?
Did they say? I mean, they didn't really say what his symptoms are, did
Right.
they? So we don't know if
No.
it's cognitive. I mean, if it's
Right.
cognitive, then absolutely not. But if it's just
Right.
like a
Right.
bit of dyspraxia or something like that, then that's not going to affect his ability to work in the clinic.
Right.
So that would be great.
That was kind of
Also,
where my mind went.
yeah. And he was great with the girls at the fire camp.
Yes. Yep.
So, whatever he ends up doing, I just hope that he's able to stay, with 19 and stay
Yes.
kind of connected to the family. But yeah.
I agree 100%.
I also felt really gutted for him when Maya and Karina turned up with the baby.
Yeah, you
And
could tell.
it seemed like he tried to force a smile, but he
It
looked
did.
so sad. And I wonder if that just like compounded his sadness of losing 19 and losing firefighting because he's also now lost the opportunity to be a part of their family. Like because he lost that when he left last year. And we know that Jack wants the picket fence and the 2.4 children. We've known that since season one because that's what he wanted with Andy. And although it wouldn't have been like the traditional family that he dreamed of if he'd fathered a child for them, but he blew the opportunity of being an active part of a child's life and making himself like a permanent and very real part of Maya and Karina's family. And I wonder if like in seeing the baby, that all kind of compounded it, and he just realized that he's just lost so much after the last year.
I mean, there was definitely something there when he did that forced, like half crooked smile at the baby.
Yeah.
You could definitely see there was so much behind that. And again, wanting to be kind of in Jack's mind during that
Yeah.
moment. Like, what's going on, Jack?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a lot. And I would love to know what it was for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll see, hopefully we'll see more of that story unfold.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. I have to say, for someone who doesn't usually get emotional at TV, I cried both times watching when they got
Did
under that
you?
table. When they got under that table, I cried the first time when I did like the watch through, and then the second time when I watched it in order to do my notes, I cried again. I thought, you bloody wet sock, what on earth? But it was just so moving. It really was. And I loved seeing that group hug, the way they replicated, because we had like we've seen it on top of the truck.
Yes, I was just going
And
to
that,
say that.
yeah, and then we had like the best version of that we could get after Andy's assault, bearing in mind they all had to try and squeeze in that bunk and the beds, they had Jack in the bed and then Maya and Karina were on the floor next to the bed and then everyone else was just crowded around. So it was like a modified version of it. I loved seeing that again now on the kitchen floor. And the way Karina and Beckett kind of respectfully stayed slightly on the sidelines, but they still crouched down to the floor in solidarity. It was just
Yes,
a
I
really
noticed that
gorgeous
too.
and poignant way to close out the episode. And now
Oh yeah.
knowing that they filmed that scene, knowing that the death knell had been sounded for the show, that's
Yes.
actually made it all the more poignant. Because the professional
Yes.
becomes personal then, doesn't it? And art imitates life, and
Yeah, when you
that's...
watch it, it definitely gives a different weight to that scene,
Well, now I want to
for
bloody cry
sure.
again.
I know, for sure.
Right, let's wrap this bit up so I can eat my sandwich and eat my pain.
Okay.
Did I miss anything? Did you want to say anything else about Jack?
No, Jack, just good job, Ray Damon.
Yeah, he was amazing. Overall, I thought this episode was like a game of two halves, me really, that I liked it the first time round, and then, or at least I liked it more the first time round than when I watched it the second time. It sort of
Okay.
like that some of the clunkier moments became clunkier, for want of a for want of a better way to
Okay.
describe that. I don't have great command of the English language today, but yeah, some of the bits that I thought were a bit clunky stood out to me more the second time round and made me feel a little bit more uncomfortable the second time round, like some of the stuff at Uncle Vinny's
Okay.
wake and some of the stuff with Nina's mum
Yes.
kind of stood out to me a little bit the second time round. I was a bit, I think, because I was aware of them maybe. And so, however, the stuff with Jack was so beautiful and so powerful that I think that actually saved the episode for me.
Okay, that's
What's
fair.
your overall thoughts and feelings?
I'm kind of the opposite. The first time I watched it, I was like, kind of felt like something was missing. And then the second and third time I watched it, I liked it more.
Right.
So we're kind of we're different, but
Yeah.
I thought it delivered for sure. It really left a lot of questions. There was a lot of loose ends that were not tied.
Yeah, it was
And
definitely that,
so it
yeah.
left, yeah, it really left you wanting more,
Yeah,
for
which is
sure.
always with that's the art of writing great TV, I guess. So yeah, it certainly did its job where that's concerned.
Yeah, at least for me, because
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, is it next week yet? Because I need answers.
Oh, same. Yeah, I'm definitely
Yeah.
looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. Did you see any themes in this one?
There were probably honestly several.
Yeah.
Hard to pick one. Probably endings, the endings of things,
Yeah.
I would say. How about you?
Well, I thought that sort of overwhelmingly it was loss,
Yeah.
which was sort of quite obvious, I guess. But I thought that maybe there was a splash of loss of control as well. Because in terms of loss, you've got obviously Kitty who's mourning a loss. I think Emmett realizes that he's probably lost Travis. And I guess loss is like an ending. I think that maybe we're on
Yeah,
the same lines with that.
I do.
Jack feels like he's lost everything.
Yep.
19 have also lost Jack.
Yep.
Beckett's lost his family. Karina is now in danger of losing her career. So I
Yep.
think there's quite a lot of loss. And in terms of loss of control, Jack has lost control of his work situation because the decision's been taken out of his hands. You know, he left
Yep.
firefighting of his own volition before, but now he's lost control of
Right.
that. He's being forced out of it.
Right.
In a slightly more tenuous and yet literal sense, had the nanny had Ebola or something, 19 would have had very little control over that situation. There was a loss of control there. So, like, luckily for them, it was
Right.
just dengue
Yeah.
fever, but
Yeah.
there was like a loss
Yeah.
of control of that situation. Travis has got a massive inability to control what's going on south of the border.
Yep.
Both Vic and Beckett, and then Theo and Ben struggled to control the situations that they were faced with. And then finally, it was down to Connie to kind of take control of her situation. She was the only person that really
Yeah.
had any control, and she chose to take that control, thank God,
Yep.
at the end and ask Ben for help. And I suppose Beckett's taking control of his situation as well by admitting to himself that he has to
Yeah.
step away from his family.
Yeah, and that's an end of something, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's the loss of his family, but again, he's the one taking control of that situation and controlling the loss, I guess. But yeah, in terms of the next episode, what are your takeaways from this one and what are you looking forward to for the next one?
I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on with Chief Ross,
Yeah.
and Sullivan. I'm interested to see what goes on with the lawsuit with Karina and the baby. I'm interested to see what role Jack takes because, I mean, they're not going to just get rid of Jack completely. And I'm interested to see what happens with Eli and Travis. How about you?
I'm definitely interested to see where this lawsuit is going and what the mother's motivation is for bringing it now. And obviously, I'm very eager to see Jack sort of take back a bit of control and figure out what he wants to do next. As I say, I hope that he's going to stay with FD in some capacity and find a way to remain integrated with 19. But those are my two main things, really. Is yeah, the lawsuit and Jack. Like, Travis has made his own bed. Whatever happens to Travis, he's done to himself. So, but yeah. What about best growth for you? Who do you think had the best growth in this episode?
I'm gonna give it to Beckett.
Me too. I said Beckett too. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. And the best scene for you?
That's tough. This episode had a lot of good scenes, but I'm gonna have to say the table at the end.
Yeah.
How about you?
I went for two because I think direction-wise, I think it has to be the scene where Jack watches Karina run outside to deal with whatever's happening with the three kids and then turns and walks away. Because the way that Tessa Blake directed that, he looks so small and so alone. And
He
the way he's
does.
limping away with his stick through that empty barn, getting further and further away from the people and the place where he used to be of purpose and of use. And so I just think from a directorial point of view, that was just a beautiful piece of work. Like, it just told the whole story right there in those frames. But that said, all of them lying on the floor under the table whilst Jack sobbed was just beautiful from every single angle. And as I said, it hit me right in the feels twice. So, yeah. What was the best line or lines or best piece of dialogue for you?
That's tough. I'm probably going to go with the exchange between Kitty and Travis when she fixes his tie.
Yeah, that was really nice.
It was beautiful.
That was really, really
How
nice.
about you?
Well, we all know that I'm an idiot and that idiocy amuses me because it's on my level. So I really liked when Beckett said, "Gird your loins," and
Oh,
Vic said, "God, don't say loins."
yeah, don't tail lines, yeah.
That I just enjoyed the writing and delivery. I mean, do I even need to ask who the MVP of this episode was?
No.
I mean, obviously, it was Grey Damon all day long.
Yes, Grey Damon, 100%.
And what was the most gif-able moment for you?
I actually picked Gird Your Loins.
Funny.
How about you?
I think I already mentioned earlier on that it was, for me, it was Maya's face when Kate calls Karina Bishop's wife. One of Danielle Savory's classic Maya eye rolls. Yeah, I enjoyed that. So that's that one. Next time round, it is True Colours. What a tune. They've picked a good old song to name that one after. And I also like it because, Rainbow Gang, and we've got all the colours. I enjoyed it. I like it. And it says the Station 19 crew struts their stuff at the Fabru. That's very hard to say. The
is.
February Winter Pride Parade, where Maya encounters someone important from her past. Mason, let it be Mason. Do you remember when we were doing our lost storylines and I said, I want Mason back because I think that'd be really interesting now? Let it be Mason.
Probably
Calm down,
is
Melissa.
talking to
It's
Mason.
too late for you to sway anybody, Melissa. Just calm down. Karina looks to Bailey for support. Good. She's a good point of reference
She
for any
is.
and all situations. Good decision. Travis and Eli arrive at a crossroads. Ooh.
Oh,
Maybe he is going to come clean.
maybe.
Or maybe Eli's going back to England and then Emmett can stay in the country and then they can be happily ever after.
We'll see.
Again, Melissa, calm down. We will not be bringing you guys our breakdown of this episode on time. In fact, we may have to take a brief hiatus of a few weeks because the way this stuff works is that I don't have access to the episode on a Thursday. I don't normally have access till the Saturday or the Sunday, which means recording on a Sunday or a Monday. But next Monday, I'm going to be spending all of the livelong day on an aeroplane, winging my way towards Tiffany in California.
Yay!
Woo!
We're
So that
finally gonna
means
meet.
that I know. So that means that, that we obviously can't record. And then I'm in California for the next two Thursdays. So I'll be in San Francisco for when Stefania's episode airs. I was really hoping because I knew that there was going to be like a gap in the run of 10 episodes because of the your silly football thing, the NFL draft, that's what it's called. And I was really, 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 really hoping that the draft was going to be like this week or next week so that we could watch Stefania's episode in LA together. However, the stars have not aligned. So, yeah, I'll be in San Francisco for Stefania's episode, and then I will be with Tiffany in LA
For the 100th episode.
for the 100th episode.
At least you get to watch two episodes live.
I know.
That'll be cool.
That's going to be so cool. Yes.
Yeah.
So,
So,
but yeah,
awesome.
so obviously, I'm not going to trug all of my equipment over to California. My suitcase is already rammed with plenty. So I'm afraid, guys, there's going to be a wee bit of a hiatus, but we will be back as soon as we can with more episodes. But if you follow us on our socials, I'm sure there'll be a few updates from us
Yeah, maybe do some
in the
lives.
interim. Yeah, maybe do a couple of lives. Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. But yeah, so we will see you guys when we see you. So sorry that we're gonna be having a bit of a gap, but I need a break.
After a year, Melissa and I are finally meeting, so it's an exciting time, guys.
Super exciting time. So yeah, it's gonna be weird, and I'm sure we've discussed this before, but yeah, it's gonna be really, really surreal. But it's long overdue because it was our 1 year anniversary of doing the podcast,
March 15th.
March 15th. So yeah. And as another like little aside that means nothing to anyone but us, I actually arrive in San Francisco 10 minutes, 6 minutes actually, if the plane's on time, 6 minutes into Tiffany's birthday.
Yep, that's a birthday present.
So I'll be there.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll
We
be there.
got a lot of jams in this episode. We got a lot of jams out.
I know, and so varied.
Yes, very, very,
We've had
very
like
varied.
very varied, but we've had everything from flash dance to I don't know who did that Jack and Diane song. Was that that person that you like, the Bob Seger?
I don't
Is that
know who
Bob
does
Seger? I
Jack.
don't know who
No,
does
that's not
that.
Bob Seger. I don't either, but it wasn't Bob.
But yeah,
Yeah, that's it,
here we are
guys.
again, us jukeboxes. But yes, we will let you guys go. And I really want to finish the sandwich. So I'm gonna go too. And then I'm gonna edit this episode so that I can get it out and finish packing. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm already in California.
Yes. Woo-hoo. All
Whoop,
right.
whoop,
It was
whoop.
good to
So we'll
see
see you guys
you.
when we see you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.